kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you. I can't even talk. Starting things off, Jacob Garner's here. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm fucking awful. I try not to get too personal on the show, but a very close aunt of mine passed away this weekend, and If I'm a little somber or a little not as animated as usual this episode, that's why.
So it's totally understandable, though.
Yeah, she was a sweetheart, Rosie Camisa. I love you. I miss you. You were amazing, and they're dancing a lot more up in heaven right now. You should have seen her at my wedding, man. She was dancing up a storm with all the young kids.
Back when I had the one ups playing.
Oh, yeah. She loved them. She was like, oh, they're such a wonderful band. What kind of music is this? And then you had to explain, oh, well, it's all video game music. No one understood, but they enjoyed the music anyway.
Well, that's good, at least.
Yeah. So how have you been?
I'm all right. Like, I mean, I got moved on my job, like, with pretty much, like, no notice, so they moved me back from headquarters to the distribution center where I was working at. So
good, that'll teach you.
Yeah, no, it's really great because, you know, I was told that the job was going to be permanent, and it wasn't, apparently, and we've since moved, and we're now paying $500 a month more for rent for a job I no longer have.
That I mean, sucks.
I'm still employed, but it's just like, guys, like, you told me this was permanent, and you told me that there was going to be a raise, and now there is neither.
That sucks.
And this is corporate world, I suppose.
Oh, geez. So what are you guys planning on doing?
Well, we're here for a year lease. We can't move out till November.
Have you tried talking to the landlord? Maybe they'll understand.
We've thought about trying to move out, like, maybe in like over the summertime, because that's when everybody, like, you know, like, that's when rental properties really go, but I don't know.
Hey, can't hurt to just talk to them and be like, hey, listen, this permanent job I was given wasn't so permanent.
Yeah,
you never know, the landlord might be understand. Most landlords are dicks, but you know, you never know, you could get a good one.
Yeah, I mean, like, they seem like all right people. We'll have to find out.
We had a good one time. That was fun. And then we had a lot of shitty ones. Like, not professionally shampooing the carpet, and they take an entire security deposit over shampooing the carpet.
Hopefully you fought that.
Oh, we had no way to fight it, because the people that were our landlord were lawyers. So that shit was ironclad.
That I guarantee that would not have held up in court.
Like, yeah, well, we didn't have money for a court battle over a couple $100.
I would have represented you.
Oh, thank you, Jacob. That means a lot. That someone I didn't even know at the time would have helped out.
Your Honor, I will use my extensive knowledge of what I've seen on Matlock and Judge Judy and Judge Mills Lane to win this case.
Let's get it on. Speaking of getting things on, we got games to talk about. Are you ready to start things off?
Well, you're so talking about getting things on. I thought we were about to have the sexy episode of SML Podcast.
Maybe a different one. Not the one that I'm dedicating to my past Aunt Rosie.
Fair.
that might not go over too well.
Would she have had a sense of humor about it?
Probably.
It's all right. We'll save the sexy episode for another day.
Yeah, that'll be another day. But we're going to start things off with Monster Energy Supercross 2, the official video game developed and published by Milestone, released February 8th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $59.99. All the thrills of the Monster Energy AMA Supercross Championship. Live the life of a pro, put yourself to the test in the compound, tackle challenges, manage your events, and attract new sponsors to earn fame and unlock new content. We've been covering these pretty much on a yearly basis now, so I figured I would hand the reins over to you to check this one out. What did you think?
Remember, like, how back in the early days of the SML podcast, what was his name? He hadn't played a video game in like 2 years, and so part of it was just like a 30-minute segment of watching him play.
Oh, Bogue.
There we go. Yeah.
Those are the early days of SML.
Yeah. I remember we watched him play Man versus Wild and like he set himself on fire or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. This kind of feels like that because it's like I haven't played like a dirt bike game since like 1995 on Mac, and it was a 2D game. So,
oh god,
all right,
so you were the perfect candidate for this.
I lied, I probably play fired up Excite Bike every once in a while, you know.
To apples comparison with Monster Energy Supercross when you look at it.
Really, I mean, it's spot on. Actually, you really couldn't even tell the difference between the two.
Maybe the dirt physics are a bit better.
Slightly.
Anyway.
So it's been a while. So, you know, I went into this, you know, not having really played much motorcycle racing games, but, you know, give it a shot. So you start off the game and it like, you know, do you want to do the tutorial? And the menu actually messed me up because I thought the way it was set up, I just automatically assumed it was going to give me yes. And it was like, no. And I was like, oh no, I like,
what have I done?
The game? What have I done? And I just messed up like not being able to access the tutorial. But thankfully enough, a few screens later, I found out you can just access it whenever you feel like it. But at the same time, the tutorial wasn't particularly helpful. Like, it allowed you to drive around an arena and, like, arena track that's in an arena. And, there's the standard dirt hills and all that other kind of stuff and, like, the sharp turns. And as you were doing it and constantly, like, messing up and flying off of your bike, it would be like, oh, hey, you should press brake. And brake is this. And I don't... Honestly, I kind of got the vibe that it might work better on a PS4 than an Xbox, but it was just like the controls for like the handbrake and it wasn't the handbrake, but there was like a separate braking thing for doing sharp turns, and it required you to have your like right bumper and right trigger at the same time, and it was just like it never felt intuitive. Like the whole entire time
I was doing it. I'm a single finger gamer too. Like I only ever have my pointer fingers on the top buttons. So yeah. I could see how that could be a problem.
Yeah, it just never felt intuitive. And like at the same time I also felt like it might have worked better on maybe on like a PS4 controller. Like I don't know.
I don't believe you.
I don't know. Stuff I would struggle with on Xbox, like it always like there were certain games that just felt better on a PlayStation controller, but I digress. So anyways, the tutorial wasn't particularly helpful, which is fine because once you complete the tutorial, you can do it allows you to access like the single player campaign, like multiplayer. If you want to go into this thing called the compound, which is really just like a huge valley that you can dick around in and just drive your dirt bike wherever. I found the compound to be heck of a lot more helpful than the actual tutorial because then it was like, then you could just drive around and mess up constantly and figure out how certain things worked instead of the game interrupting you like mid jump. Like, you know, you're like, you'd be like, oh, hey, you should do this, blah, 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 blah. And then immediately, like, I would crash afterwards.
You're in midair.
Right. And I'd be trying to do, like, what the game just told me to do. And it was like, we should, honestly, like, I feel like I should have put together, like, a best of me flying off the bike all the time.
Plenty of time for that.
So there's that. I mean, I enjoyed messing around in the compound, like, because there's also a lot of different terrain that you can get used to and different, like, it also gives different kind of curves. But then at the same time, the collision for it, which I realize, like, this is hopping around, but I don't know where else to talk about it. but the collision for it never, it was kind of weird at points because it was just like, there was at one point I remember I actually clipped right through a bridge that should have knocked me off of my bike. But then I hit this rock that was, you know, about the size of like a salt lamp in my bedroom. And it's just like all of a sudden, like, you know, I'm flying off my bike like 15 feet.
Oh, God.
So like there were some times where it's just like, I mean, almost all the time the collision, like the collisions made sense. But then like there were just like little minor hiccups here and there that it was just like, why did I fall off my bike? Or even more so, why didn't I just fall off my bike? So there's that. There's a career mode, which, I mean, if you've ever played any kind of sports game ever, like since Madden came out, like it's a standard stuff. You know, you can do it. It presents you with like a week by week thing.
I know in the previous like games, they had like qualifying races and pole position races and then the actual race, and you could adjust the length of the races and all that fun stuff. I'm assuming it's the same.
It's pretty similar, but they, but there's also like, I mean, you play Madden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's got the similar stuff like, oh, do you want to talk to the journalists today? Do you want to hang out with fans? Do you want to like
that's
train?
Cool.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, I guess it's more in depth. But the thing is that the training I found to be problematic because ideally, you know, you're like it helps improve like your statistic or your stats and stuff like that. But like one of the training things that I had to do was like you're trying to make it so your start time right off the gate is, you know, as quick as it possibly can be. Well, the game doesn't tell you how to do it. It just assumes that you know what you're doing because, you know, oh, we've been through the tutorial, like, which was bare bones and didn't explain much. And so, like, all these training things, like, I ended up straight up failing a bunch of them because, like, I'd try, like, it lets you retry stuff, like, four or five times. And so I'd be like, oh, okay, that's how I got that. And I almost made two stars. I'm going to retry it again. And then I'd fail it. But because it was like my fifth try, I completely just failed the whole, thing. And then it's just like, oh, how do you want to spend your, like your press day? And all it is just like a cinematic of like you signing some t-shirts. And so it's just like, yeah, it increases your fan base or, the amount of fame you have, but it's just like, whatever.
So it's basically extra fluff, but it would be better to just like get to the racing, right?
Yeah. And I was actually a little surprised that they didn't like have a thing where you could just like, you know, move forward and just let the game handle it for you.
Yeah.
Like as I said, like Madden, where, you know, your results may not be as good as you'd want them to be, but then you don't have to sit through all the fluff.
Makes sense.
And then I just like I was absolutely crap at the races. I can't corner for shit. Like I fully admit, like I had a lot of fun doing the jumps and stuff like that, but actually trying to like break quick enough but also keep the gas so I could, you know, go around corners, no, that's not happening. I had about the same exact success with like F1 2018, you know.
But you enjoyed that one. So did you enjoy Monster as well?
I thought it was okay. Like it wasn't one of my favorite ones that I've ever had, like that I've ever reviewed on here. Pretty much like if you're into motocross, and you already have a handle on these type of, or you have a handle on these type of games, I definitely recommend checking it out. I mean, there's plenty to do in it. Like, you can upgrade your bike, you can upgrade, like, your stats and stuff like that, and hopefully become, like, a better rider. And hopefully you figure, like, hopefully, you know, the person listening to this review knows more about these kind of games than I do, because I was just lost. But if you're a beginner for these kind of games, I'd recommend waiting till there's a discount, or if you're going to buy it right out, like, you know, right now, then at least have a friend who knows what they're doing, so then they can explain things to you and work with you on it. Yeah. Cause the game does not do a lot of hand holding.
Or at least not be as bad as you.
Fair, fair.
Yeah, I enjoyed last year's version. I've been eyeing this one up, and based on the based on the additions to the career mode and everything else, I might have to pick this one up and give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I'd recommend checking it out. I mean, it's not for everybody. It's not. It's definitely not like an arcade-ish kind of game. The physics are real. It is punishing, but you know, if you're into this kind of stuff, by all means, go for it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Jacob, it is always a pleasure having you on. Do you have any final thoughts on the game or on life in general or whatever you want to say?
So I've been replaying SSX3 on, like, you know, for which came out on like the original Xbox and PS2.
Yeah.
That game has, it's pretty solid still. I was kind of surprised. Like, I mean, that is a 16-year-old game, which, like, it's one of those, like, holy...
back hurt.
Right? I was just like, shit, this thing came out when I first started college.
This game, like, can drive.
Oh, God, yeah. Weird. This game saw Lord of the Rings Return of the King in theaters. but, yeah, it was just like, I'm really surprised, like, just how friggin' solid it is. I mean, like... nowadays, like, game reviewers should blast it because of, like, how little content there is. But, I mean, it's just, like, the gameplay is great. And it's just, like, I'm having as much fun with it now as I did back when I was in college. I was really surprised by that. So, pick up SSX3, now available on Xbox One.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Blaze Blue Central Fiction Special Edition, developed and published by Arc System Works, released February 7th on the Switch for $49.99. The definitive edition of the Blaze Blue series, Blaze Blue Central Fiction is the most played 2D fighting game in the world, featuring with beautiful graphics and a well-designed fighting system. That is what it says on the page. And by the giggles, I'm sure he's enjoying that. Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
Oh, man, it's good.
Are you featuring with beautiful graphics?
Yeah, the wheel of fate is turning.
How is Central Fiction Special Edition?
Is Central Fiction Special Edition? Well, let me tell you something, brother. I played the first Blaze Blue. This would be Calamity Trigger when it came out in like 08, something like that. It was over 10 years ago.
My back hurts now.
Yeah. Yeah, when that first dropped, because it was like, okay, Arxis is moving away from Guilty Gear. They got this new series, Blaze Blue. So, you know, I got that game when it came out. I have this special or limited edition of that, whatever, that came with the soundtrack and like an art book or some shit.
Didn't that one also come with a DVD of like how to play the game?
Maybe. Yeah, it was a small box. I actually have it twice because I inherited it from somebody else I used to know somehow. But yeah, so I really liked Blaze Blue at the time. I liked the fighting system and the characters, and I enjoyed kind of trying to unravel its story mode. And then I kind of gave up on the series almost immediately because it was just iterating so fucking fast I couldn't keep up. You had Calamity Trigger, and then you had Continuum Shift, and then Continuum Shift Extend, and Continuum Shift 2, and Continuum Shift 2 Extend, and Chrono Phantasma. It was always like, by the time an iteration was like hitting console, like there was already another one in the arcade. So I just got into this perpetual loop of just like, well, I'm not going to buy this because there's just more coming. I didn't want to just keep investing. Like, you know, I wanted a definitive edition, as it were, of Blaze Blue. But it's like, it's something I've kept tabs on over the years. And when I see games go on sale, it's like, okay, well, wait, what does this one include? What is Chrono Phantasma? What, you know, what is this? And then, yeah, Central Fiction seems to be where the buck has stopped. The original Central Fiction came out like 3 years ago at this point. And there hasn't been anything else since, until now. So in a way, this is kind of the Blaze Blue game I've been waiting for 10 years, because it's all of the Blaze Blue in one spot for me to enjoy, more or less. It has all the, you know, the characters. That's I don't know that it has every single mode that appeared in every single game between then and now. I doubt it.
I mean, that's a lot of games to keep tabs on.
That's so. A lot of game, but there is also a lot of game in this game.
How much game is in this game?
Well, let me tell you.
Brother.
Yeah, there's like 30 some characters in this, so that's like three times what was in the original. I literally spent while watching the boring ass Super Bowl, I was just kind of like just taking all these characters I didn't know into training mode and just seeing what their moves were and just getting a basic feel for them. The game has one thing about Blaze Blue, and I think especially now, I mean, apparently it's the most played fighting game in the world if the copy is to be believed, but it's I feel it's tough to get into because there's a lot of systems and each character is very different from one another. Like almost every character has some kind of unique, well, every character has unique abilities, but most of them have like unique, like extra meters or icons or things to keep track of just above like the standard super meter. And that's not an exaggeration. Like there is so much differentiation between the characters and, you know, what they can do and what their abilities can do and what you need to keep track of. So it's kind of a bear. It's not just like where you kind of learn the basic special move movements and then you can jump into a Street Fighter or whatever and kind of get the basic hang of it. You know, Soul Calibur, you can, I think it's easier to get into those games. Here, it's like you really need to look at a character, look at what they can do, and then start applying the systems to them. And the game has, to its credit, it has very extensive tutorial documentation on both like the game system itself and then character specific tutorials where, you know, they'll run you through the paces of like, okay, well, this is what their distortion drive does. That's like kind of what the main distinguishing factor between the characters is, what that is. This is what it does. This is what you need to keep track of. This is what you need to think about. And then it teaches you that. And then there's another one for like, okay, we're just going to walk you through their special moves. there's one for just character strategy, which basically just kind of gives you a wall of text, and then just kind of cuts you loose. And then there's character specific challenges. So there's a lot of content there for you to learn the characters, and start trying to get good with them, as it were. Which I really appreciate. It's a good thing to have. And there's a lot of text content in this game. Woo, exciting, right? But there's like a glossary of fighting game terms that you might need to be familiar with when they talk about canceling and pokes and this, that, and the other thing. There's a glossary of those terms. There's a large compendium of information just about the world of Blaze Blue. If you need to get caught up on it, for purposes of properly enjoying the story mode, they'll teach you about all of the two dozen cities that are involved in this Blaze Blue universe. The story mode of this game, the main story mode, is a pretty large visual novel. Don't expect there to be a lot of fighting in there. It was a while before I got to a fight in it. Just kind of, it was just a lot of text, and it's not bad. Like they have, usually it's like animated, you know, like 2D characters, or what was it? Just hand drawn 2D stuff that's like lightly animated, like their mouths are animated. It's not like fully animated, though they're all fully animated sequences. But you know, it is engaging to look at, but it is story. You know, it is story heavy. That this is a different part of that game is that, and right at the beginning of it, they're like, hey, do you want us to catch you up on everything that's happened in the other Blaze Blue games? It'll take about 30 minutes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But it's there if you want it. And that story is there, and it is going to be time consuming for a person to get in it. But if you don't give a shit about any of that, like if you're just like, okay, story, you know, whatever, and you're just here for fighting, the good news is that I just dropped something and it flew across the floor, but I know where it is. there's plenty of just straightforward fighting modes. There is an arcade mode, which is just standard. You know, you fight through eight characters, but also there are story beats within the arcade mode. So it's basically the inverse of the story mode, in that you get like a little bit of story on top of like three or at the beginning of three or four of the fights, like real quick, a quick conversation. But it's mostly just fighting. Though the interesting thing is, when you pick a character, you then have a choice of what chapter to play with them, because different characters joined at different points in the series and are only involved in certain parts of the BlazBlue story. So some might only have like an Act 3 story contribution, and some have 1, 2, and 3. Some have 2 and 3. I didn't look at every single one of the 30-some characters. I don't know if there's one that just has like 2 or 1 and 2 or 1 and 3. Something weird like that. But it is interesting, and it gives you just more variations of the arcade to play through, which is, you know, something that I appreciate. It was something like, for example, with Smash Ultimate recently, like their classic mode, they tailored something to each character specifically, which made it interesting to go through with each character. And this does something similar in that regard. There is, you know, there's a score attack, there's a survival mode. There's this thing with a great name called Grim of the Abyss. Which is kind of a survival, like you are leveling up, you're getting like enhancements for your character and equipping them. So it's a little bit more of an like RPG light. And I mean really light, but character customization, trying to beat more and more CPU opponents. It's a cool thing and challenging. I was getting my ass kicked, but it's been a while since I played a lot of like BlazBlue, yeah. You know? But being on Switch, which I'm system's not as much of a powerhouse as the others, but it's no slouch. I mean, the game looks great. Like the character models look awesome. I mean, if you told me 10 years ago that you could put a BlazBlue on a portable system and it would basically lose nothing along the way, I probably wouldn't believe you. The Switch, and it's still magical. Here we are. Yeah. Like the character models look great, and, you know, nice high definition character sprites. You know, not many games do it like this. Like even Arxis themselves, they do that fake 3D 2D fighter thing. That's what most fighting games do, but these are, you know, honest to god classic hand-drawn sprites. And the game, you know, it feels really good and tight. I should say, like, when I'm reviewing games on here, 90% of the time when I'm playing games on my Switch, I have one of those Hori D-pad Joy-Cons that I use. I'm not using like the standard Switch Joy-Con. Like,
I've seen those. How are they?
I think it's good. I mean, they're only like $20.
Really?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they won't work off the system. That's where the conceit is. That's why it's so cheap, because you can't just like put it in the Joy-Con grip and have it work. It has to be attached to the system to get power. It doesn't have like a battery in it. Gotcha. But yeah, I think it's a good D-pad for $20 on the Switch. I think the Switch Pro D-pad is a bit better, but for portable purposes, I think that Hori D-pad does just fine. It's obviously worlds better than the quote-unquote D-pad that comes on the Switch. But yeah, I did not have a trouble pulling off moves in the BlazBlue Central Fiction Special Edition. And yeah, game has great music. It always has. That's nothing new. It looks great, sounds great, plays great. Nothing new, but it all carries over to this portable version of the game. If you have been waiting to get into BlazBlue, this seems like a good one to pick up. If you're looking to play BlazBlue on the go, this has everything in it. There's plenty of single player content to keep you entertained if you're not going to go with the online matchmaking, which does exist, which is on there. But if you're not so much of an online fighter, like, which is kind of me, there's plenty to keep you busy. Like the arcade mode alone was just like a lot of fun. I love classic fighting game arcade modes. You know, you do get a little ending at the end of each, chapter you go through, which is cool. Might be called from older games, not sure, haven't played any since Calamity Trigger, but it's there. It's a great package, I think. Like there's a lot there. It has all the characters. It feels like something you can feel good about picking up. Very complete.
Awesome. So $50 on it, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a buy it, absolutely. My only caveat would be, if you haven't played an anime fighter and you're looking for something maybe a little more simple, maybe check out Cross Tag Battle first on the Switch, which came out last year and I also reviewed and I also said was worth buying. That is a little bit simplified and could get you maybe a bit more used to just the style, but they're both great, and they are very different. Not very different, but they are different. I'm super happy with it. It's awesome. I'm so happy to finally have a Blaze Blue that's just like it's all of the damn stuff. Ah, feels good, man.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Me too. Whew.
Good stuff. Tim, always a pleasure having you on. Do you have any final words?
Oh, man. No, I really don't. I should have, but I didn't. I got too much going on. Oh, it's bad. I'm trying to catch up. Had a lot of turmoil in my life for the car situation and trying to get things back on track. But now it's all back on track. That's all sorted. So it's great.
Hooray.
Rest of the day, just don't get into a car accident ever. just don't let it happen to you because it's a mess.
All right, moving on. We've got Pernell Vaughn joining us. Pernell, how are you doing?
It's rainy and it's cold, but it's not too snowy, so I'll take what I can get. How about you, man?
A lot of ice up here.
Oh, so you guys still have ice. Yeah, we lucked out. So the rain is actually washing the snow away, and it's not freezing over. And I am grateful for that because I was speeding earlier.
Good weather to be speeding in.
Yes, it is, or sort of. Good enough for speeding.
Yeah, I think we got like an inch or two of snow up here and then just a shitload of ice right on top of it. So, yay, slippery.
That 60-degree February day we had not too long ago. This feels so distant.
This fucking weather, man.
It's all over the damn place.
I can't even...
Some days I'm living in Long Beach, so I feel like I'm living in Short Beach, Antarctica. I don't even know anymore.
That's a good way. That's like how this entire episode is so far. It's just, man, fucking...
Snowy Short Beach weather.
I just... Words fail me today. It's been one of those days, so...
Well,
we should probably talk video games.
Damn right. Chatting video games always makes a day better.
It does, and you always cheer me up, so I'm looking forward to these. First game to talk about tonight is called Death End Request, developed by Compile Heart and Idea Factory, published by Idea Factory International, releasing February 19th on PS4 for $59.99. When video game programmer, oh shit, I didn't pre-read this, so there's crazy names that I gotta work with. Uh-oh.
Those are better. It's better to have to break through the names.
When video game programmer Arata Mizunashi receives an email from his missing colleague Shina Ninomiya, did I get those right?
Yes, you did.
Sweet. He soon discovers she is trapped as the only player in the virtual video game world they created, World's Odyssey. How can Shina escape, beat the game you've created, and unlock its perfect ending? But beware, 99% of players have failed. Pernell, did you fail?
No, I did not fail, but what I did realize is that, honestly, this is going to sound bizarre, but this is probably Compile Heart and Idea Factory's best RPG that they've done in a long time.
Oh,
yeah, like, I have genuinely enjoyed this game, like, thoroughly enjoyed it, and don't let the beginning of the game fool you, because it starts out really slow, and it is a visual novel, so... Keep in mind, as you may know, if you've been a fan of, you know, the Compile Idea, you know, companionship here, you know that a lot of their games don't work on too many assets. They don't run with a lot of assets. It's about the gameplay, and it's usually like still imagery and stuff that conveys the story. So that is true in this case, too, where there's a lot of stuff that's going on in the game, and a lot of times it's conveyed by dialogue and text. And like the still image they had that kind of slightly animate, which looked really nice, honestly. But with that in mind, there's a lot that's being conveyed early on with one stationary character and a lot of text to be able to pretty much tell you, hey, this is what's happening, but you can't see it. But again, it's a visual novel, so you kind of just accept it. But once you get past this intro part, which usually takes about, 45 minutes or so, the game is awesome. So... As you mentioned earlier, the premise is that there's a character that you control that's trapped inside of this video game. Think sort of like just a general MMO. And she is meeting and hanging out with various NPCs that exist in the game. And she's actually socializing with them and partying up with them. And they seem to be a little smarter than she expected them to be, which ends up leading to some pretty interesting plot developments as far as the game's concerned. Like, why are these NPCs so lifelike and intelligent? And as you're meeting these party members and joining up with them, you're also engaging in like very interesting combat mechanics in which the battles play out sort of like a pachinko machine.
Hmm.
So what happens is every character can get a sequence of set up a sequence of up to 3 moves per turn. It can be attack moves, assist moves, you know, healing moves, all sorts of things, or just using an item if you really feel like it. And when you combine all these moves, that's the sequence that you'll output when you actually select your target to attack. And different moves have different ranges of damage, like, you know, different areas of effect. And when you select them, they will all go off in sequence. So move 1, move 2, move 3. In addition to that, depending on the types of moves you use, there is also something known as a knockback that you can trigger, in which case the character will hit the enemy and send them flying off into the distance. And if they hit the edge of the map, they will spring back onto the map after taking damage from hitting the edge of the border. In addition, if they hit another standing party member, the party member will also attack them and send them flying off in the opposite direction. So if you set up the right group of people, you can get a pretty interesting like ping pong bounce effect off on all these monsters. And it's pretty awesome. In addition to that, there's also these like different like marks on the map called bugs, because you're in a glitched video game. And these bugs have varying effects that can either, like, you know, they typically will do something bad to you, such as like take a percentage of your health away or lower your speed or whatnot. But they also sometimes have a side bonus positive effect, like SP bonus or speed or attack bonus. And as you run over these tiles, you'll incur all the effects of those bonuses and detriments. But you'll also raise a corruption meter on your character that can also be raised and increased by getting attacked by monsters. If your percentage for your glitch accrues to being higher than 80%, your character will enter something called glitch mode, which is sort of like Mary Skelter's blood effect, where your character takes on a like new form and they get a strength and speed boost. As long as you're in this form, you'll have these bonuses. But if your glitch meter goes below 80%, you'll revert back. In addition to that, if it reaches 100%, you die. Just flat out die. And that is it. So you want to balance that out. And if you really need to kind of like abandon ship sort of on the glitching at when you're over 80%, another thing that you're afforded as your super form is a sort of nuke attack, where you do super damage to all the enemies on the field, and then you revert back to your normal form. So there's a lot that gets juggled amongst all these things. And in addition, because there's more, sometimes when you input that trio of attacks, you can get the percentage of a chance to unlock a new attack. So you might do like, you know, Dark Spell 1 plus Dark Spell 2 gives you an 80% chance to learn the Dark Spell 3 level for those skills, something like that. And once you learn it, it becomes a permanent skill that you can use and equip to your guy. You can equip up to 16 skills at a time, and then you just mix and match them to get the best party loadout. And honestly, the battle system in this game is a lot of fun. Oh, one more thing to the battle system. Because there's a lot going on here. It's a surprisingly fun, deep battle system here. So in addition, I mentioned earlier the field bugs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning of every battle, there are 100% of the field bugs on the map. So whatever number of bugs the game generates, that's 100%. And if you walk over a bug or knock an enemy across one, you make them go away, and that 100% percentage goes down. If you end up getting the percentage below 50%, the programmer that you mentioned earlier, Arata, he is able to then perform various hacks, quote unquote, on the board. In which case, he can do a number of things. One, he can do like weird like stat augmentations to make the enemy's corruption levels go down, or make your corruption levels go down, or make everyone's like, you know, defenses go up, stuff like that. He can summon previously defeated bosses onto the map to help you fight battles, which is pretty freaking cool when you think about it, because they draw aggro and everything. They're like, they're additional party members while they're on the map, and they bring bonus effects. It's really awesome. When I came across, like, wow, this is legit. And in addition to that, there's also, there's also the weirdest thing in the game, but I didn't use it as much as I thought I would. There's the genre bender, I call it. And what that is it's a series of special attacks you can trigger, in which case the programmer changes the game to play like a different type of game, like a shooter or a puzzle game or like an action game. So, for example, one of the earliest ones you get is the shooter genre. And you take your SP or your magic gauge, basically energy, and you launch bullets like a shooter. You move the cursor around, you shoot all the enemies on the screen and do like large amounts of damage to them. And there's like a slot machine that's like a gambling game and stuff like that.
That is awesome.
it's a lot of fun. Like, I really liked it. And I only described half of the game, because there's a whole other freaking half of the game to this. So in addition to being inside the game, every once in a while you have to back out of the game to control, quote-unquote, control Arata, the program.
Uh-oh. Oh, shit, what happened?
That was really weird.
That was weird. I don't know what happened.
That makes two of us. But on the positive, I do remember where I left off, so I can just jump right on again if you're okay with that.
Yeah, fuck it. Just keep going.
Okay. So when you get back into the main game, there's like, oh, sorry, we can start with. You eventually get back out into the real world, and while you're there, you're controlling Arata in a visual novel, more closely visual novel style game, where he is being hunted by someone or some things, and he's trying to solve the mystery of, A, where his friend's body is, the one that's trapped in the game. And in addition to that, trying to figure out what caused this weird phenomenon for World's Odyssey to be back up and running when it's supposed to be down and no longer running. It ends up resulting in a pretty cool murder mystery scenario. And I later learned that the writer of this game is the guy that wrote the game, the Corpse Party games. So it's a lot, both the quality of the writing, and in addition to that, the more macabre tone that the game can take. Because there are a lot of game overs that take place in this game. Hence the name Death End Request, because you request, start over. But like, there's like numerous scenarios where, like, you have to make a choice, and depending on your choice, the game could end on the spot. And if the game dies, yeah, it's weird. It ends up working out pretty well. It's kind of fun, because when you do die, the game will say, hey, you can reload a previous save, and you carry over the experience and money you've earned since you last saved, so you don't lose those things. But you do lose the other progress. So you have to pretty much walk through the areas again or something like that. So it's weird, because this component, while cool, has a double-edged sword to it. Because, one, like I mentioned earlier, you've been fighting monsters and running for like 30 minutes or something, and you come across a thing in the dungeon, and the dungeon then offers you a choice. Hope you make the right choice, because if you die, you're doing that 30 minutes again. But hey, your experience is fun, you know. But if you make the right choice, no big deal. You're cool. You just keep moving on. But then that leads into the other problem, which is that you want to see these other options. You want to see these game overs. So, unfortunately, you're going to feel drawn to experiencing these game overs, which is something I actually did, which means that you will be likely redoing certain areas, or maybe just outright just saying, screw it, I'm going to just run past these monsters, which will save you all that time. Because, again, the experience carries over. So, you fought like 10 guys on the way there, then manage to trigger a game over. Just don't fight those guys and keep running, because you don't need their experience anymore.
Yeah.
No, I do what I did, which is still kind of fight them, because like pachinko battle. But there's a weird aspect to that. And also, without spoiling too much, the true ending component that is mentioned earlier may involve some of those bad endings as well. So, so basically be thorough and have fun, but it's kind of hilariously meta that for years these compile heart games have had these true ending goals involving really bizarre and sometimes just weird requirements. And now there's a game that requires you by design to meet some of these goals to see the true ending and actually save your character. But
that's fantastic.
It is hilarious and great, yet also macabre, because some of these game overs are pretty dark. But it's nothing that's going to really deter you. And I don't think I've seen anything that made me go, oh God, I don't feel so good. I feel queasy. So that is not a game ruiner in the slightest, at least not to me. I had a lot of fun playing this game. And like I said earlier in the beginning of this review, I play a lot of Idea Factory and Compile Heart RPGs. Some are hit, some are miss. But I genuinely feel like between the battle system and just general gameplay and just the writing and the storyline, this is probably my favorite one they've done on the PS4. I've enjoyed it a lot. It goes highly recommended by me, especially if you're into these games. Like, if you're not into Idea Factory games, actually, this might still convert you a bit, because while it still has some of the fan service-y stuff that they're known for, like I mentioned earlier, the storyline is a bit darker than their normal fare. So you might be like, well, I don't like the usual poppy mess and crazy anime girls. Like, well, yeah, but now in this game, feels a little different. Feels a little different. There's a hard-boiled detective and some murder. Cool stuff. Play the game. It's worth it, and I think you'll enjoy it. Only downside I found, aside from the earlier thing, which ended up not being too bad, is I found the game to be a bit easy. I put it on normal difficulty because I didn't want hard to deter me from making progress for the sake of the review. But even on normal, I never found myself challenged. Like, oh, I also had a penchant for wanting to learn a new move, so that may have been a part of it. But I was wrecking bosses and enemies, which is a good thing, I guess, for some people. But there is hard mode there, just saying. And maybe hard mode would have been more of a challenge for me. Just easy, like normal mode wasn't too bad at all. So,
gotcha. So do I even need to ask for $60 what you think? Because I think you kind of covered it.
Oh, I covered it, baby. This is a buy, buy, buy. Not that pop group buy, buy, buy. None of that.
Bye, bye, bye. And we got copyright strikes.
Bye, bye, Death End is the game for you.
Well, moving from one RPG to another, the next game to talk about is called Dark Quest 2, developed and published by Brain Seal, released February 8th on Xbox One for $14.99. Dark Quest 2 is a turn-based RPG where you control a party of heroes on your epic quest to defeat the evil sorcerer and his minions. Purnell, tell us about it.
This game is actually pretty light, but cool. So the idea is that there's like a central hub being the town where you can select a various number of minions. But actually, I should get back to that in a second. The primary component of the game is the dungeon diving, in which case you take, starting with one adventure and eventually multiple adventures, you take them into a deep dungeon that is composed of a series of rooms that are interconnected by hallways. These rooms are traversed by you taking the character, clicking on him, and then actually like moving the cursor across the floor tiles and saying, go here, here. Basically like a turn-based strategy RPG style of movement. And when you go from room to room, you will occasionally come across monsters. And you can pretty much walk up to them, click the button, and attack those guys. And damage is determined by like D&D style stats. As in, damage to a monster is based on, if you have an attack power of 3, that means you have 3 chances of doing 1 damage apiece. So is that coupled with like your accuracy rating and say, okay, you have 60% chance to do 1 damage 3 times, which seemed corny at first, but I actually came to like that a fair bit. It's an easy way to calculate your damage potential, even though the game still tells you maximum amount of damage you can do to the monster and the maximum amount of damage the monster can do to you. As you go through different dungeons, you may either by way of accruing them at the tavern in town, or by finding them in dungeons themselves, unlock new characters that can join your party. And different dungeon quests let you use 1 to 4 different adventurers in your party at one time. So you might have a dungeon run where it's like just you and a barbarian. In another case, it might be you, the barbarian, the priest, who is, I guess, the knight in this game, threw me off a bit. The priest, the barbarian, and like an elf or like a rogue, rather. And you kind of customize your party based on who you think is the coolest for these different situations. While you're running through dungeons, you can find blue bottles, which are basically just like magic urns. And when you take those bottles back to the surface, when you beat a level, you can go to a character in town and you can use them to unlock or enhance new abilities for your character. So, for example, the barbarian gets a double attack strike that they get where depending on how upgraded it is, every number of attacks, you unlock a double attack. So you'll attack twice in a row, which is pretty convenient sometimes. Though, unfortunately, you can't control when to activate that double attack. It just does what it wants. But still, it's cool when it works. And there's other abilities like that, too. So you'll be earning bottles and then trying to gauge, based on who you like to use the most, which you'll want to unlock or upgrade. Because there's like abilities that even now, like I don't even care about these so much. I want to just max out these 3 specific abilities because they're really freaking useful. And then save the rest of them for other characters that I unlock in the game. But you'll pretty much be able to do that. You can go to town and buy potions, which can be used to do various things in the dungeons, like heal your characters, give them magic shield buffs, or extra turns and things of that nature. They all cost money, which you earn from killing monsters and finding treasure chests down in the dungeon. This game is really simple, but it's also fun. It was the type of game where when you sent it to me, my first thought kind of was like, it seems like a mobile game. And you know how I am when it comes to mobile games.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing on them, but I'm always willing to give them a chance because you never know. It might still be appealing to me. And this is one of those times where I still found the game to be appealing. It was cool to get myself a dwarf and a barbarian and a knight and run around this little dungeon, sort of like Hero Quest, if you're familiar with that old board game from back in the day.
Yeah, they said that was one of the inspirations in the game, and I definitely saw that while playing it.
I'm actually glad to hear you say that to me, because it definitely shows wholeheartedly as you play the game. You're looting corpses for treasure. You're busting barrels for treasure. There's a Skull of Fate that you can find in some of the dungeons where when you trigger it, it activates certain effects, or one of a number of effects, none of which are really bad for you, so you don't have to feel afraid to trigger the Skull of Fate, thankfully. But there's one effect that is absolutely nothing happens, so it's not a great thing, but you don't have to worry about your character just suddenly keeling over and dying in the dungeon. It also has a very D&D-like style of ability use, where some of the abilities, or even a lot of them, can only be used one time per dungeon run. You might be thinking, that's some old bullcrap, but one, that's how D&D typically was, so, and two, the dungeons themselves aren't particularly lengthy. Like, you're not going to be spending 30 and 40 minutes running around in a dungeon. They can get done usually like 10 minutes or so, and just when you think you're getting tired of a run, it's over, so it's not even a bad thing. I enjoyed mixing and matching my party members and buying potions in town to get weird random effects to lead me into the next dungeon run. There's a map that you use to determine each dungeon run. Basically, there's a guy in town that says, hey, get to the king or get to the evil wizard. And there's like a map you progress, and each square on the map is one dungeon to run through. So you can see from the beginning how many dungeons there are to take on. But there's enough, I think, to justify the time that you'll spend in this game. And there's enough that you'll want to buy, such as equipment to equip your characters with, and, you know, just making use of all the characters you find as best you can so you can learn their ins and outs. There's enough here to entice you to really sit down and play this again, especially if you like Hero Quest from back in the day and games of its ilk. So don't let the coat of paint fool you. It even animates well, too, I think. Like, nothing stylish, but it does the job where you're like, hey, I don't mind this. I'm enjoying watching my guys walk up to things and attack monsters and things of that nature. It does a good job. And it's, I think it is a game that surprised me on the joy level, and one that I think could surprise you, too.
Yeah, I enjoyed it myself. I do have one complaint, though. I wish there was a way to change which direction up was, if that makes sense, because it's an isometric view. So when you push up, I think it moves you up to the left.
I agree with you. It's funny enough, I think you did the same thing I did, was when you first learned it, you tried to push up, and it was like, no, that's not the way I wanted to go.
Exactly.
And tried to find, you know, invert axis or something. Or not invert axis, but you like tilt it to like, you know, up, down, left, right, goes up, down, left, right. You know, games all for that. And this one didn't have it. So it kind of threw me for a loop there. So that is a detriment. I agree with you there wholeheartedly. But
I would love the option to be able to switch which direction up counted as on the game. After a while, I was just holding my controller crooked, so I knew which direction each of the D-pad directions were for.
I will say one benefit, at least in regards to this, is that since it's not, you know, action based, you're not like pressed for time to get the correct directions right. So even if you're like, everyone's like, crap, I meant to push this, you're not like dooming yourself by pushing the wrong direction. But it is a freaking annoyance, to be sure.
A minor one, but still. So overall, $15 on it. What do you think of it?
I think it's a try, unless you're a fan of Hero Quest, and it's a buy it, because it definitely accomplishes what they sought out to do. I didn't even know it had that inspiration until you said it.
Yep. That's a big reason why I personally would give this a buy it, just because my love for Hero Quest eclipses any kind of issues I had with the game. And if your game is inspired by Hero Quest and you played Hero Quest, you're automatically my friend and I love your game.
There's a phrase I've ever heard right there. Yes.
And we can't forget to mention that the game has multiplayer as well. So if you and a buddy want to play together, fucking go for it.
I didn't even realize that. I mean, being a lone wolf and a gamer here, but yes, if you have another friend in there, get in on this. Get your dungeon dive on.
Do it up. All right, we got one more game with you. That is called Access Denied, developed by Stately Snail, published by Rattalaika Games, released February 5th on PS4, 6th on Xbox One, 8th on Nintendo Switch for $4.99. Calling all safecrackers and lovers of puzzle games. The time for testing your brain while listening to Rain and Thunder has arrived as you try your hand at a series of puzzles that are playable across 36 levels. Will access continue to be denied to you, or will you defy all odds and overcome all hurdles? There's only one way to find out. Burnell, did you find out?
I did find out how hilarious it is that their actual like flavor text actually involved, you know, Rain and Thunder. Because that is the OST, and I thought that was one of the most interesting aspects of this game, was that it sets up that relaxing atmosphere of, I'm just going to sit here and solve some puzzles. Because this game, the make no bones about it, they don't do anything else but give you puzzles. You literally boot the game up, say, go, and here's a box. Do something with it. So it is actually not half bad, because it's exactly what I was hoping it would be. You know, it's basically like, I watch different shows. A lot of TV shows have done this, where it'll be like the characters like, here's this cube. And the cube is actually a secret heraldic box that you have to solve the puzzle to unlock it and hopefully not go to hell like in Hellraiser. But basically, you solve the puzzle cube and you unlock its contents. This game is a series of various puzzle cubes, puzzle fax machines, puzzle dodecahedron, puzzle things. And each one tasks you with something different. They never actually explain what the thing is. You just have to figure it out. And believe it or not, it's surprisingly intuitive. I mean, there was like one puzzle where I was like, what the hell do they want me to do? I don't understand. And then I realized you can turn the device and see the different size and stuff like that. I was like, oh, here we go. And there was a whole other layer to the puzzle.
Now, a whole new world.
A whole new puzzle to solve with you.
And we got another copyright strike.
Boom! All that copyright strike is worth it. But this game is cool. Like, honestly, I mean, the controls are really simple. You know, push the button, push the directional stick to, like, you know, spin the thing around, or push the other directional stick to actually, not directional stick, but one of the sticks is to turn the device. The other one is to move the cursor. And then you can, like, press one button to interact, and there's two zoom in and zoom out button. And that's it. Those are all the controls. Press a button and move crap around. And that's genuinely all you need to do. But it works. Admittedly, the only downside to this that I came across was that sometimes the controls can feel a little stiff. But believe it or not, on the PS4, it's not even half bad there, because in addition to the cross pad, you can use the touchpad to just kind of use, like, just to move the cursor around using that. And it's a lot smoother. Like, I'm going to move it here, then here and there, and then do stuff with it. But the other thing was that I felt like some of the puzzles feel almost like throwaway, as in, like, to say, hey, this is a simple puzzle. Just crack this thing. But that is a weird, that's like almost like a sub complaint or a, not a sub complaint, it's like a varies by user complaint, because I could have just been cracking these bad boys and someone else could come on here and go, oh, I was stumped for like 10 minutes. But I figured it out, so it's hard to say, you know, just how true that statement is. But for me, I felt like there were definitely a couple of puzzles where I was like, oh, they could have made this more complicated. Come on. But for the cost of
big brain over here.
That's right. That's why I stripped my cheese. But for the cost that they're asking for and the 36 puzzles, the puzzles that definitely stumped me, those alone were worth the cost of $5 to solve some cool puzzles. Because I like solving puzzles, and I honestly can't think of any other puzzle games that are on the market at present that aren't on a cell phone. And even on a cell phone, I don't know them because I don't play on a cell phone. But I can't think of any other puzzle games on the market right now that saw have puzzles that work in this fashion. This is a very unique puzzle game for today's market. And if you can think of one, listener, by all means, tell the show, because I want to play those too. But in the meantime, for this game, if you're a puzzle fan, I think this is a definite buy. It's worth your money.
And gee, I didn't even get to ask you.
I'm getting so intense. I get excited. I like going.
I'm getting tired of your bullshit, Joe. I'm just going to make it up on my own. You could just sit there and listen. Oh, Lord Purnell, it is always good having you on. Thank you for putting a smile on my face. Do you have any final words before we move on to Chris?
Get some delicious tea in your mouth, chug it, and feel good, because there's something about tea that can make a freaking winter shit day kind of okay. It's just like that soothing motion.
Do that again. What was that again? All right, as promised, Chris Taylor's here. Chris, how are you doing?
As promised.
Yeah, I said Purnell to give me some final words because we're moving on to you.
Oh, okay. I hope they were good final words, because I don't know. I don't know what bearing that will have on our set of reviews.
It was a slurp. It was weird. If you listen, it'll make sense.
Okay. Well, I always listen, so.
Sure, you know.
I have definitely listened to this show at some point before.
Once or twice.
Yeah.
I mean, you named it.
I did once. I think somebody renamed it, right?
Yeah, but I still stick with the first name because it's better. Because someone might listen.
Yeah, exactly.
It still fits. 6 years later, it still fits. Someone might listen.
It's been 6 years. That's crazy.
I know. Isn't that sad?
Nah, I think it's good.
What am I doing with my life?
Playing a lot of video games and talking about them to your friends and audience.
Yay!
Yay!
Should we talk about three more?
No.
All right, well, that's it for this episode.
Any final words?
Yeah, fuck all this. I'm done.
That would be especially bad if I hookied today, because these are all games I requested.
They are.
I think this is a first.
It might be.
Multiple games that I specifically asked for because I really wanted to play these.
And I got your back and I took care of you and you're reviewing them.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about is called City of Brass, developed and published by our friends at Uppercut Games. Released February 8th on the Switch for $19.99. Become a darling thief in City of Brass, a first-person action adventure from senior BioShock developers. Armed with a scimitar and a versatile whip, you'll lash and slash, bait and trap your way to the heart of an opulent Arabian Nights-themed metropolis, or face certain death as time runs out. Chris, tell us about it.
Did you say darling thief?
Yes. It's supposed to be daring, but I can't read properly.
No, that's fine. I like it. I like the darling thief angle.
I didn't even notice until you brought it up.
Well, better me than the YouTube comments, am I right?
What YouTube comments?
Dear SML podcast. Well, next time you have an email competition, then somebody will point it out.
Probably. So yeah, become a daring thief. A daring darling thief.
Yes. City of Brass. So, Uppercut Games, our friends, what else did they do?
Submerged, I think was the name of it. I'm gonna have to look this up.
No, that's fine. I didn't play Submerged. I was just curious. They
were on the show before, so they're friends.
Oh, sweet.
Yes, it was Submerged.
Nice. Well, what they have made here is a first person action sort of roguelike. So the story of it is that basically, some assholes wished for a city made of brass and immortal life and all this stuff, and they made some kind of deal with some genies or something, and yeah, it just all went sideways. And now they do have a city of brass. The city is rich and opulent, but no one would trade with them, so they all starved to death. But because they're immortal, they didn't starve to death. They became skeleton bros.
Yay!
So, and zombie bros and sisters as well, because actually there's female zombies too. But anyways, so the city became cursed, of course, but also full of treasure. So that's basically a perfect setup for what's going on. And that is that you play one of initially two, but actually several unlockable characters.
Spoilers.
It's not spoilers. It's right there in the menu. In fact, that's what I kind of like about this game, is that there's not a whole lot of spoilage going on, because there's so much to unlock, and it's all like you can kind of see how much of it there is to unlock, and it's a lot. So when you start the game, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. First thing I did was the tutorial, which teaches you how to play the game and gives you the backing story all in the same go. So once you start a new game, it just starts. And I really, really, really like that. I just wanted to pause and say that is a great feature. I love the tutorial, learning how to play the game, and the story is all in the same little 5-minute like segment or so.
Two birds, anyways. One stone.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I like. There's no opening cinematics other than the startup CGI like movie, which kind of reminded me of like an N64 or PlayStation game, like how they'd put all their like FMV nonsense right at the start of the game before you actually started, and you'd be like, ooh, ah, and then start the game and it's something different. Except this game actually looks good. I'm not saying it looks like an N64 game. That far be it for me to say. Actually, this game looked really good. I was sort of impressed, because I knew the game would be stylized, so I knew the skeleton bros would look a little bit cartoony, things like that. You know, the game's very bright. It's not thief or, you know, something like that. Like, it does not occur. It's not that kind of treasure hunting game. It's actually all done pretty much in broad daylight or in well-lit rooms and things like that. It's much more in the first-person shooter sort of vein than it is like an RPG. But anyway, yeah, so you start the game, you got your initial two characters have a sword in one hand and a whip in the other hand. Of course, sword is the thing you do combat with, and you can also attack with a whip, although for less damage, but that thing is basically your, like, kind of your Indiana Jones style, just do everything kind of tool. So of course you have your, you can whip enemies, and what I really love in this is that depending on where you whip the enemy will determine how and how effectively you have disabled the enemy. So skeletons running at you brandishing a sword, if you whip that sword, it will fly out of that skeleton's hand and they'll be like, "What?" And then you can run up and finish them off with the sword. If you smack that skeleton right in the face with the whip, then they will, like, rear back and, like, hold their face, and then you can, you know, run up and slash them to death. Or if you hit their feet, they'll trip, and they might still have their sword in their hand, but now they're, you know, down for a little longer. And I really, really like that attention to detail, and that factors into strategy when it comes to fighting. Two other things, and they cover this in the tutorial, you can grab an enemy with your whip and drag him into a trap, of which there are many. This game is full of traps. You can pull an enemy onto a trap. You can also use the other shoulder bumper to push an enemy onto a trap, if you feel like having the trap take care of him instead of your own sword. Which, you know, because your initial sword takes a couple of whacks to, like, get rid of a skeleton, but you push him into a spiky trap, and then that spiky trap will take care of him pretty much instantly. So the levels are randomly generated, essentially, but they're kind of set up in the same way. I played a couple dozen rounds. Like, I played quite a lot to see, like, what all changes, and it's, you know, the structure is roughly the same, but there's always different treasures and different enemies and all these different setups and stuff. But it all, like, starts with you drinking a potion, and then that leads to, and, you know, the potions tend to be kind of different, and that leads to another aspect of this game is the cataloging system. So if you die in the game, of course, you start the whole thing over, I believe. I didn't get far enough to see if there was any real checkpoints.
Yeah, after every boss, they have a checkpoint area that you could skip to on subsequent playthroughs.
Okay, cool. So that's like Xenon Valkyrie Plus in that way. So that's cool. So, but yeah, like, every time you start, you know, things might change around. Well, every enemy, trap, and item that you can get in the game, you can push the dash button, the minus button or whatever. I guess it's minus since the other one's plus. And that will add it to your sort of encyclopedia, which will describe what the thing is. And then you can refer to it later. Until you have used the item or accessed it at some point, you actually won't know what it is. It doesn't enter into your thesaurus. I don't know. your reference until you actually interact with it. So that's pretty cool. And those, of course, stay between playthroughs. And also, you get experience points for each playthrough depending on how far you get. So if you suck, like me, at first-person treasure hunts, you know, you still gain experience and you still get ranks. And when your rank goes up, then more things get unlocked, including other characters, which are, you know, really interesting. Because you can kind of look ahead and see what characters you can unlock. That's one of the few things they will show you. So yeah, like, as far as the actual gameplay goes, I found it to be very smooth. I thought the whip was extremely fun to use. The sword, definitely could use a better sword, but there are definitely swords available. There are genies in the game that will sell you stuff if you've collected enough treasure and coins and stuff to sort of go and purchase it. Those are also random. And of course, you can learn about different genies and what all they can do. And I guess you can use a wish in order to get the genie to help you out better. I'm not sure what consequence that has, but they do keep track of how many times you do that, and it does unlock one of the burdens, which is another thing that the game has that I really enjoy, is that it has blessings and burdens. So you can choose what things you want to be enhanced in the game or easier in order to get an easier experience. And all of those are available. You can turn all of them on, like, right at the very first time you play. So, like, extra treasure, extra health, you know, all kinds of stuff. It describes all of them. It's like 10 of them or something. And then on the converse side, you can actually unlock burdens, and you have to unlock those through gameplay, and they make the game harder. So that's a really interesting way to me to handle difficulty, that you can choose what ways in which you want the game to be less difficult and or more difficult, and you have to still unlock the more difficult parts through gameplay rather than, you know, tweaking it however, you know, at the right at the start. So quite like that.
Cool. Well, overall, what did you think of this one? $20 on it?
Yeah, $20. This is a well worth it game, I think. A lot of care has been put into it. I really think it's nice and fast and it's fun, and you don't have to invest too much in exploring because, you know, it's going to be a different game next time you play it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I just really like, you know, it kind of reminds me of like games that I used to play that were, you know, they were first person shooters, but they didn't have guns. So something like Hexen or, you know, things like that. I guess it also had a little bit of a BioShock feel to it as well. But more than anything, it reminded me of one of my favorite first person shooters of all time, and that's Serious Sam. Just in the sense that it's fun and arcadey, but you don't really have to take it all that seriously. And, you know, it's just fun. It's not like, you know, all blood and guts and death and, like, you know, seriousness.
Doom and gloom and...
Doom and gloom, yeah.
Other rhyming like Doom. Things.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a fun romp through a zombie-filled treasure house, and you're going to keep wanting to, you know, start it up, even if you get killed by a bullshit trap, of which there are many.
There are so many bullshit traps in the game.
There are. But you can't fault the developers because it's random. So
you only have yourself to blame, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, that's my only real thing in the game is that I'm like, man, I do kind of wish there were either less traps or I had better vision for them, because I just kept walking into it every time. I think I'm just too used to Skyrim, where everything's sort of
really everything's going to be Skyrim again, isn't it?
That was my obligatory Skyrim mention, yes.
All right, well, we're going to move on to some 8-bit games that you can't compare to Skyrim.
Oh, yeah? Just watch me.
Oh, God. Next game to talk about is called Oniken Unstoppable Edition, developed by Click Team and Joy Masher, published by Digirati, released February 8th on the Switch for $9.99. In a post-apocalyptic future controlled by a sinister corporation, ninja mercenary Zaku is the last hope for humanity. Inspired by the demanding gameplay of 8-bit action platformers, Oniken pits your agility and swordplay against a gauntlet of enemies, traps, and challenging bosses. Chris, tell us about it.
All right, Oniken. This is, as soon as I saw this one and Odalis in the eShop, I was like, I need these. I want to play them. And through research, I found out that, yes, Oniken is actually, you know, while I initially was like, oh, this must be, you know, because The Messenger is out and it's doing super well. And of course, you know, Shovel Knight and Celeste and all of these, like, throwback to the bygone days of the NES, you know, people are reimagining 8-bit classics and bringing them out. So this is like next in the long line of new stuff. No, actually, it turns out this game is from 2012.
Really?
Yes. It initially came out on Steam 7-ish years ago.
Damn.
So it's older than this show.
Oh.
Anyways, but it's gone through like some iterations, you know, there's some new stuff in it. And but yeah, this is a Brazilian developer, which I always, you know, so far everything I've played from Brazilian developers has been great. And this game is no exception. This is absolutely an 8-bit game of the kind of, I'm going to say, like the Natsume sort of camp of, you know, your Shatterhands, Shadow of the Ninja, that kind of stuff. So, like, just a really good action platformer, not a whole lot of frills, not a whole lot of levels, but a pretty fair amount of difficulty, if I don't mind saying.
Nice.
Story is almost non-existent. It's basically, you know, this evil force controls the world. The evil force is called Onikin, by the way, and it's
the name of the game.
Well, I thought it was going to be the hero, but the hero is Zaku. He's a high-powered ninja mercenary guy who, you know, the army has no choice but to hire him in order to thwart this evil. I just love the audacity, the 8-bit audacity of the story of this game. And yeah, so you run around and you slash things with your sword. You face large-ish bosses. Actually, there was a couple of room-sized bosses that I fought, and it even contains special, like, auto-scrolling levels, like a jetpack thing. Not a jetpack, a jet ski boat type thing. Yeah. Kind of reminded me of the Wave Man stage from Mega Man 5, which I actually really enjoy. And then, you know, you jump off that and onto a boat and you keep fighting bosses. Like, it doesn't end there. Like, each stage is, like, pretty packed with, like, with different things that happen. And, yeah, like, you know, they say 8-bit love letter, and that's really what this is. Music's fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. Again, the graphics, they look suitably 8-bit. The only things in this game, and this is, spoiler alert, going to come up later in the next game too, is that they decided to do two things that are easily avoidable and that I take issue with. One, it has the really cool, like, scan lines added in, sort of thing, that emulators do, and, like, now a lot of these new retro games will have it as an option to be like, hey, play this with scan lines, play this with a curvy screen, play it with a slight blur. You know, like I mentioned, yeah, even the Atari collection had, like, glow from the from the graphics. Sorry, my cat is, like, trying to unplug my headphones. This game has all that. It has scan lines, it has the sides of the screen bow out like you're playing on a curvy screen TV. It has a little bit of blur, a little bit of glitching, but it's not optional. You have to play the game with it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so you have forced retro mode, which, so, and maybe you'll agree with me on this, you know, I'm 36 years old, I was there when the NES was out, I didn't live through three world wars and the heat death of Antarctica to be forced to play games like they actually looked in the 80s on my 19-inch Sylvania. I love playing retro games in current high-definition clarity, and I at least want that option, because the game looks great. The game, the pixels look great, and I want to see all of them.
I agree.
So that's one thing. And that does not take away from the game or even the aesthetics of the game. Like, it still looks good. So, you know, at the very least, the scan lines look pretty darn authentic. I have to hand that to them. The other thing is that there is no controller customization, and get this, jumping is the A button and attacking is the X button.
No.
The B and the Y button are not used. There's a special sub-weapon, like you can throw grenades, for instance, and you have to push up and X to use them. They didn't map it to another button. So, exactly. So I was like, okay, I get it. You know, Brazil, you know, they enjoy the Master System, and that thing has, you know, two face buttons, and you had to be creative with it. But choose two different face buttons, please. B and A, B and Y.
Yeah, you said A and X, and I looked at my Xbox controller instinctively. I'm like, oh, there's nothing wrong with the A and X. And then I remembered that A and B and X and Y are different on the Switch than they are on the Xbox.
I should clarify, I am playing this on a Nintendo system. And yeah, I don't think I've ever played a game that has that exact configuration, and it's forced, you know?
Yeah, A and X, those are weird buttons to use for a game.
Yes. So, not to take away from the overall experience, this is exactly what I was hoping it would be in terms of a really excellent 8-bit action platformer. I love, love, love this game. I don't want the two minor complaints are my own thing, and I think just something that, you know, I would just recommend to this developer to please make this stuff optional or customizable, because, you know, we're here in 2019, you know, the world is about to, like, be flooded away.
<Let's>, there's not much please, time left.
Let's please enjoy our toys on our own terms. I think that would be great.
Yeah, well, $10 on this one. What do you think?
Absolutely. Go and buy this. This is a great throwback to add to your collection. And I didn't mention the controls are tight as hell on this thing. I love it. Like, I actually didn't even think that the Switch was, like, capable of being, you know, that precise, because most of the, not really the throwback games, but, like, most of the emulated old games do have, like, that almost undetectable lag, but you still can tell something's up versus playing it on your Nintendo.
Yeah.
Or your old NES. This doesn't have that. This is tight and responsive. It's fun. It's challenging. You know, aesthetically, it's great. It's just got the lack of customization options that I kind of wish it had. And to be honest, at $10, that's a bargain. So
awesome. You got one final game, last game of the episode, Odalis the Dark Call, developed again by Click Team and Joy Masher and published by Digirati. Also released February 8th on the Switch, this one for $11.99. As darkness spreads, one hero rises up. The old gods have forgotten this land. Odalis is an exploration action game and loving homage to the 8-bit genre classics. You play as Haggis, a battle-weary warrior who must wield his sword once more to rescue his son from darkness with a capital D. Chris, tell us about this one.
I can't believe the hero's name is not Odalis. It's Haggis.
Haggis.
I want some Haggis. My God. And I wanted to make a joke about the hero's name being Haggis, you know, being full of terrible things. But but I couldn't bring myself to do it because this game is not full of terrible things. It's full of good things. So Odalis is a game that that the same developer came out with in, I want to say, 2015. So this is also an old game, not old game, but it's also a not brand new. It's just brand new to the Switch kind of experience. And in this one, they actually improved a few things over Oniken. For one, this is not a straight up romp through, you know, however many stages and bosses to get to the end. This game is a fully fledged, for one, there's more levels, and for two, the levels each have alternate paths and secrets, some of which are actually required to reach the ending.
Ooh.
So this is a game that absolutely encourages exploration, doing all kinds of stuff, and backtracking back to levels, which, of course, you can select on the world map. So it's not like a typical Metroidvania. You don't have to slog through a whole bunch of stuff you've already done. But going back to levels with new power-ups that you found in later levels in order to access different paths and things like that. It's very creatively done, and I really appreciate it. This one, you can tell right away that the sprites are bigger and badder. Your main good guy, Haggis, looks spectacular if you're talking about 8-bit sprites and stuff. Enemies look awesome. Music's also, again, great. Now you have a sub-weapon, and basically, like with the sub-weapons, this game is handled in a little bit more of a Castlevania way. So you have like throwing axes, and you'll very much recognize them as soon as you see them. They're limited in number. You can get them in the stages through enemy drops and also through merchants. There are merchants scattered in the levels. There's usually right next to a checkpoint, which is great because the game doesn't, you know, fault you for dying as much as a Castlevania game would. And in fact, I would put the difficulty at below Castlevania level for sure, just based on the kind of Castlevania games this is based on. And, there's just so much good stuff in this game. So there's once you choose your stages and stuff, you can also choose to change your character's clothes, quote unquote. It changes the sprite's appearance, and each one is an amazing reference to an old video game without being a direct ripoff. But if you decide to be, you can be a red gargoyle, you know, and you'll know what it looks like when you see it. You can be a vampire hunter, and of course that vampire hunter is going to look very familiar, even though he's using a sword, because your sword's your main weapon. And my favorite is that you can be a royal knight, and he looks like Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins, and he jumps the same way.
Oh, God.
Like, doing that, like, leg spreading out type thing. It's beautiful. So on top of the regular platforming and using sub-weapons and things like that, which, by the way, the sub-weapons don't really go away. If you get a new one, you can switch between them. You have things like ledge grabbing, which is nice. It'll remind you of something like Metroid Fusion. And, you know, there's just lots and lots of good stuff in this game, like, to sort of set it above and beyond as in things that they set out to do in Oniken. So
it sounds like a progression of what was there, but a lot better.
Yes. And now to the complaints.
Same as before?
I have two complaints, and one of them is exactly the same as before. It's the forced scan lines, blurriness, and you know, curvy screen, which, by the way, this game actually looks a whole lot better if you put it in portable mode. Oniken doesn't. It actually looks exactly the same, but for some reason this game, they really clean up the scan lines. I want to say they almost eliminate them when you put the Switch in portable mode. I can't explain it, but it's there. And again, this game still looks amazing. These are just, you know, throwback enhancements that I just kind of wish you could turn off. The other thing, and this is even bigger than in Oniken, is the controls. Again, controls are super tight. I you know, it was great to play, but here's the thing: the jump button is again A. The attack button is now Y.
What?
Yeah, A to jump and Y to attack. It just picture what? That for a second.
Does if the you will. B you... button do anything?
No. And
what
the X
fuck.
Exactly. And, you know, they fixed one problem. The sub-weapon now has its own button, and that button is X.
That so, is weird as hell.
I've never come across that controller setup.
That is and so weird.
That one actually did affect me, because I ended up having to just do the jumping and slashing with my fingers, like, rather than my thumb. On my pro controller, I don't think I could do it on my Switch in portable mode. But like, yeah, like there's no way to jump and slash without either hitting the dead B button or hitting the X button and using a limited amount of, you know, an item of which there is a limited amount. And there's just weird. And there's no option to change it. So I really, really wish that there was that option, because this could be, like, on its face, one of definitely top five in terms of, like, these new retro games that I've been playing. I really enjoy every other single thing in this game apart from that. So, but you know, there's no additional, like, complaints or anything. And again, it's, you know, it took what Oniken went for and made it better, and then somehow made the controls worse.
Well, overall, $12. What do you think?
Absolutely. Please add this to your collection. It's fantastic. You know, you'll probably be able to hang with the controls. I mean, I was able to. I beat, you know, a few levels, uncovered a couple of secrets and things like that. And I do plan on getting to the end of this thing, because it's a fascinating game, and it takes you to some cool places. And, you know, both of these games absolutely gave me the feeling of playing like an NES game that I had never gotten to play before that was actually really good. So, like, the first time I ever played Shatterhand, you know, I was an adult. I had never heard of it until that moment. But once I played it, I was like, holy geez, this changes everything. And, you know, it inspires that kind of feeling. These games feel old and yet new and awesome. And that's exactly what I'm looking for in a retro throwback, like, modern game. You know, they're not trying to be too much. You know, they're just trying to recreate that experience, and there's clearly a lot of love that went into them. Just please, at least for future games, make controls optional if they're not going to be the standard setup, you know?
Yeah, that is so weird. A and X.
A and X on Oniken, AX and Y.
Oh, my Lord.
AX and Y on Odalis. And, yeah, that... you know, I appreciate innovation and I appreciate creativity and thinking outside the box, but when it comes to controls, please copy other people's homework.
Yeah.
they, you know, I didn't live through three world wars and the heat death of Antarctica to jump with A and slash with Y.
Yeah. Oh man, that is odd. That is very odd.
Yeah, but they're great games. I mean, again, I must stress, these are fun.
So. Yeah, sounds like you went 3 for 3 on the games you requested.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I knew I was going to like them, but, I mean, you know, they exceeded my expectations even, so.
Awesome. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks, Chris, for coming on and doing your thing. Thanks to everyone else who came on and did their thing. This is normally the part where I ask you for final words, but I'm taking them this episode. Aunt Rosie, I love you. I miss you. And I'll see you soon.